Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, no guest, just a lot of information on how to live a longer and healthier life. We're going to talk about neem. Have you not heard of it? N-E-E-M. It's on a tree. It can help with very serious medical conditions. Also, early depression. Angry people can end up taining their lives 20 years later. I'll tell you about that. I'm continuing with something I began earlier. Why sex feels good, but why it can be stressful. More in that. Then a really comprehensive look, a classroom on the air today at pycnogenol. It has so many longevity benefits. It comes from the French maritime pine tree, and I'll give you that. Plus, I want to talk about the benefits of the omega-3 fatty acids and compare fish oil and krill oil, K-R-I-L-L, and what that does. Curcumin. So much new on curcumin. I'll be sharing with you an extensive insight from research from Life Extension. Let's begin. First up, a University of Alberta study shows that helping crack the code to happiness by exploring the long reach of depression and anger over 2 decades. The study published in the Journal of Family Psychology followed hundreds of people for 25 years and found that negative emotions that they suffer from when they were young can have lasting, even lifetime, impacts upon people, especially in couples when they're middle age. The fact that depression and anger experienced during the teen years clung to people, even through major life events such as child rearing and marriages and careers, was surprising. Quote from the University of Alberta, "We assume or hope that high school experiences fade away and don't necessarily resonate 25 years later. The fact that symptoms of depression and expressions of anger can endure over many large events in life shows how important it is to deal with mental health early. Sometimes problems don't just dissipate. How you grow and change over those early years becomes crucial to future happiness." End quote. Well, my thoughts on that. Yes, we all face struggles and challenges in our development during our teen years, depending upon how much support or pushback we get from our parents and siblings. But we must also understand that this comes even earlier. This is in the epigenetics of early development. Let's say when we're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, before the age of 10. And then that is locked in, which then manifests later when we begin to develop our own personality. And frequently what happened earlier in life, epigenetically, our early conditioning, when we couldn't intellectualize it away, when we had no power to change it away. After all, what are you going to do when you're a 4-year-old girl or boy and you're not getting the kind of input or respect or acknowledgement or love that you need? You're going to emotionalize it. And later you can act out. How many people do you think are doing extremely well in school? Which could come from the fact that they're just bright and they love the topic and they're natural excellers. Then how many people are doing well in school because they're overcompensating for what they didn't get earlier? As if to say, I'll show you. I'll be the number one student. I'll get straight A's. And then other people will love me. Other people will respect me. How many people go from high school into young adult and overcompensate because of insufficiencies and doubt of their own essential self? That's what that's really telling us. Beware, the number one cause of acute liver damage is the common cold remedies. According to the latest research, over-the-counter pharmaceuticals like Tylenol and Excedrin and NyQuil and Theraflu, and prescription painkillers, Vicodin, Percocet, all contain an active ingredient that's caused over 80,000 emergency room visits, 25,000 hospitalizations, and 500 deaths annually. Ironically, concern over liver damage was influenced some degree by physicians to change patients over to more addictive OxyContin to avoid liver damage from long-term use of prescription painkillers that include these ingredients. So, this was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. So here's my question. We now have tens of thousands of studies from peer-reviewed literature showing that natural and non-toxic techniques can help with all variety of pains and even the flu. Let me give you an example. So we don't need their non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. We don't need to put our life at risk. We can thin the blood, not with aspirin. We can thin the blood with vitamin E, vitamin C, coenzyme Q10, green juices, onions, garlic, and lower our blood pressure, and help heal the lining of our arteries, the endothelial tissue. So we have options. And to help our liver today, we have some very important nutrients, including glutathione, which is extremely important, alpha-lipoic acid, which is important, and green tea and curcumin. All those are beneficial to the liver. So the idea that, well, we have a virus or bacteria, we have a cold or flu, we have to take these things. No, we don't. If you were to start taking at the first sign of a cold or flu, astragalus, echinacea, also green tea with, in it, vitamin C, manuka honey, colloidal silver, maybe 5 drops, wild oregano oil, about 10 drops, you would do more to kill the virus-causing microbes in the body than any drug they would have. And you wouldn't be hurting the body, you'd be helping it. Ginkgo biloba from China, found to contain shockingly high levels of the metal lead. You got to be very careful about everything coming in from China, because they don't have standards and they don't have accountability. So try to get whatever you're getting in the way of ginkgo from grown in Europe, where they have standards, or in the United States. Link found between cell death, inflammatory disease. And this is from Australia, from the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute. That's in Melbourne. There's a research team that recently discovered the type of cell death that is called a necro, N-E-C-R-O, ptosis, P-T-O-S-I-S, which could be the underlying cause of inflammatory disease. And so here's the idea. What do you do when you have these inflammatory conditions? Well, first, take a step back. Every day, all of us are exposed to some form of inflammatory agent. French fries, hot dogs, hamburgers, toast, buns, all cause inflammation. Alcohol in any amount, inflammation. Most artificial additives, and especially MSG, monosodium glutamate, artificial sweeteners, coffee, inflammatory. Many dairy products and gluten, inflammatory. And then how you prepare a food, even if it's a healthy food. There's a vegan restaurant in New York. This is pretty popular. But you look at the menu and you see how many of the items on the menu are seitan, which is pure gluten, and also, because it's made from wheat, and also they deep fry a lot of the items on the menu. Tempura. Well, that's deep fried, doesn't have healthy oils, creates acrylamides, so nothing but inflammation. And even when a person thinks they're eating healthy, because they just ate in a vegetarian restaurant. So you can be an unhealthy vegetarian or unhealthy vegan. So get off the pro-inflammatory items. And then take in the essential oils that help turn off inflammation in the body. Now, there has been some controversy about the oils. Which are the best oils? I believe, and there was a good article in Life Extension that explained this, that You can get oils from vegan sources, walnut oil, flaxseed oil, for example, and avocado oil, or you can get them from fish, or krill, K-R-I-L-L. But fish oil and krill oil share many important similarities, such as effectively reducing the ratio of the omega-6 to the omega-3 fatty acids in the body. Now, why is that important? Because these are biomarkers associated with lower levels of chronic inflammation. Both krill and fish oil also increase plasma and cell membrane concentrations of the omega-3 fatty acids. However, there's a difference. What scientists have found is that the uptake of the omega-3 fatty acids from fish oil and krill is different from the plasma platelets in the red blood cells. So, for example, clinical data from human test subjects suggest that omega-3 fatty acids like DHA from fish results in a more rapid uptake in plasma triglycerides and platelet phospholipids, which offers benefits given the effects of plasma triglycerides and platelet function on endothelial tissue. In lay language, you're helping your heart. In comparison, the omega-3s found in krill appear to be more rapidly incorporated into red blood cells and phospholipids. That's important because not only do scientists view the uptake of essential fatty acids in red blood cells as a biomarker for uptake into the brain, but additional research suggests that when omega-3 fatty acids such as DHA are bound to phospholipids, as they are with krill, it increases their uptake in the brain. So that further supports the idea that we should be having krill oil and omega fish oils in order to help turn off inflammation in the brain and help to prevent brain shrinkage. It also is important because one important way that the omega-3 fatty acids protect your brain is by shielding the chief memory processing area of your brain called the hippocampus. Studies show that people with lower total omega-3 have smaller hippocampus volumes. And because patients with depression experience rapid shrinking of their hippocampus, many strategies for relieving depression focus on increasing new brain cell growth in that specific area of the brain. There's now evidence that increasing omega-3 intake, especially DHA, I would say between 1 to 3,000 milligrams a day, could be an effective way of helping prevent depression and helping keep the hippocampus from shrinking. So, lots of benefits to your brain when you take it. Also, inhaling lavender oil eases menstrual pain. More women under 30 miss school or work because of painful menstrual cramps than for any other reason. They're plagued by abdominal cramps, sharper aching pains, and lower back pain. Unfortunately, most will resort to a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug or birth control pills. But inhaling lavender's essential oil significantly reduces the symptoms. Researchers found that when you inhale it and you're having a painful menstrual symptom, it's called dysmenorrhea. But you could also have headaches, vomiting, nausea, dizziness, weakness, diarrhea, mood change, depression, irritability, nervousness, fainting, hot flashes. That has happened in many people. It helps relieve that. So that's important. So get some essential oil of lavender. And what you can do is just fill up some, you can get a dispenser. That's one way you can do it. And just put it in there and then turn it on and it puts the mist into the air, or you can fill up a bowl, let's say your a sink or your bathroom bowl with some hot water, put in 5 or 10 drops of lavender oil, and sit there and breathe it in. That would be good also. There's an herbal wonder. A Kansas State University research team has found that an herb often used to help diabetic patients treat sugar cravings, also helps to destroy Candida albicans fungus. It's non-toxic, and it blocks the virulent properties of Candida. Now, according to Natural Society, most people who have ever suffered from a candida infection realize this bacterial fungus thrives on sugar. It makes us crave it to feed the candida, and not us. We end up eating empty nutrition, lacking calories, and never feel full. I remember many times I interviewed Dr. Crook, who was a Southern physician, and he was the one who wrote the best books, gave the best information on candida. And he said, you starve the candida, the fungus, vaginal fungus, or anal fungus, even throat fungus, when you get off the sugar, get off the alcohol, get off the refined carbohydrates, and start drinking green tea and nice, healthy, fresh vegetable juices. He was right. And unfortunately, millions of American women suffer because they didn't pay attention to what he had to say. So eliminate the sugar, and you'll see a difference. And that's, again, that's a, let me tell you what they did specifically here to do this. You give up the sugar, number one, and then you use gymnema, G-Y-M, gym, G-Y-M, nema, N-E-M-A. That's been used in Ayurvedic and Chinese medicine for centuries. In India, it's also known as the destroyer of sugar. And the active compound of the plant is a group of acids termed gymnemic acids. So taking gymnemia could positively affect health as a result of the research that they have seen. Quote, we have shown that this compound is safe to use because it doesn't hurt our body cells, yet it blocks the virulence of this fungus, that means candida, under in vitro conditions. Taking the herbal medicine could potentially help patients control the invasive growth of fungus and also bring their sugar levels down. Good. I'm Gary Noll. We're here to talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. Well, one popular sugar substitute, probably the most popular one in the world, is aspartame. I interviewed on several occasions Dr. Russell Blaylock, who showed why it was dangerous. Now, a new study has come out, published in the journal Redox Biology. And what they found is that this FDA-approved aspartame distorts brain function and kills brain cells. And this is just the newest study. It's concluded with lots of other research over the past decades and has repeatedly shown aspartame, the popular sweetener, in over 6,000 grocery store items, including everything from soup mixes to carbonated beverages to chewing gum, can essentially program your brain cells to kill themselves. The key study findings include aspartame administration alters the functional activity in the brain by elevating the antioxidant levels. Chronic aspartame consumption altered the neuron function and neurodegeneration in the brain. There were observed changes due to the methanol or its metabolite. And long-term FDA-approved daily acceptable intake of 40 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, aspartame administered distorted the brain function and generated programmed cell death of the brain. So, one more artificial sweetener that was green-lighted by the FDA. Very bad for you. You don't want it. You don't need it. Study shows dementia patients benefit from holistic exercise program. This is from a Teesside University in the United Kingdom, and it was published in the Journal of Bodywork and Movement Therapies. Quote, while dementia patients may often suffer from depression and declining physical and mental ability, exercise has been shown to help improve both their physical and psychological well-being. So, get your friend, your family member into doing Tai Chi, yoga, Qigong, or meditation on a regular basis. It can help them tremendously if they're suffering from dementia. And a lot of people are, by the way. It's an epidemic out there. Also, let's say that you're a child, an adolescent, and you're altruistic. According to the University of Illinois in Urbana, It is better to give than to receive, at least if you're an adolescent and you enjoy giving. The study found that 15 and 16-year-olds who find pleasure in pro-social activities, such as giving their money to family members, are less likely to become depressed than those who get a bigger thrill from taking risks or keeping the money for themselves. This was from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. Just think about that. Think of how often in our society people are conditioned to believe that they're entitled to everything they get, and therefore they're always on the receiving end, but never on the giving end. This shows it's better beyond the giving end. Now, one of the most important nutrients that we can ever get into our body is curcumin. And one of the ways we get curcumin is through turmeric. Now, according to an article in Life Extension magazine, there's new uses, especially for people who are depressed. It's effective. And in fact, it is so effective, it is as effective as an antidepressant medication. Curcumin contains no negative side effects that you would commonly find from regular antidepressant medications. And these results are in keeping with earlier research showing that curcumin increases the level of the feel-good neurotransmitters such as serotonin and dopamine. But who knew? I mean, most people would never know that. Now, let me share some in-depth classroom on the air on curcumin. There was a landmark study. It was published in Phytotherapy Research. It should be welcome news to anyone afflicted with depression, which, by the way, is becoming the world's second leading cause of disability. And depression continues to escalate despite more than half a century of modern psychopharmaceutical approaches with billions, hundreds of billions of dollars spent on antidepressants, and yet we have nothing to show for it. In fact, about 63% of patients who take antidepressants experience at least one of the numerous potential side effects, which include anxiety, thoughts of suicide, insomnia, weight gain, and sexual dysfunction. And the payoff for all these risks, many depressed patients do not respond at all to drug antidepressants, and most patients fail to achieve complete remission. Some evidence indicates response rate as low as 17% after taking them. So the question is, where is there a safer and more effective alternative to the pharmaceutical medications? The antidepressant activity for curcumin was initially suggested by various animal models of depression, but no evidence had been found on the clinical effectiveness of curcumin against depression. So researchers designed a clinical experiment that was randomized and observer masked. This means, by the way, in lay language, that the observers were not told what treatment had been allocated to the patients, and the patients were instructed not to discuss their treatment with the observers. And the first group took 20 milligrams of Prozac, which is fluoxetine, every morning. The second group took a total of 1,000 milligrams of absorbed enhanced curcumin, 500 milligrams each. And the third group took both, the one daily Prozac and the twice daily curcumin. Now, the results were measured using the Hamilton Rating Scale for Depression. The scale provides a way to rate the severity of depression by assessing mood and anxiety and feelings of guilt and suicidal ideation, insomnia and agitation and motor retardation, and weight loss. And what they found was that that responding well to the treatment was 62.5% in the curcumin group and 64% in the Prozac group and 77% in the combined group. The study team concluded there was, quote, no statistically significant difference in the improvements among the three arms. In other words, there was no difference in the effectiveness of the enhanced curcumin formulation compared to this prescription of an antidepressant Prozac in improving symptoms of depression between baseline and 6 weeks of treatment. But there's no side effects. Now, I wouldn't have used 1,000 milligrams. So just on that alone, on just that information, much wiser just to use curcumin. No side effects, and you get the same improvement as you would if you took Prozac. However, that's 1,000 milligrams. I would have started at 8,000 milligrams, and therefore you get different results. and look at all the outcomes when you're up at that high dosage. So that's the best on curcumin. Now we're going to take a break from that and go over to talk about something that's important, and that is the way we feel. Now, the other day I mentioned that there was a study, and it was shared to us by Dr. Loretta Bruening in Alternet, and it dealt with why sex feels good and why it also can be very stressful. And just to recapitulate, I was talking about how sex feels good because it stimulates oxytocin, a brain chemical that produces a calm, safe feeling. Now, I also mentioned that if you ever watch primates, they groom each other throughout the day, generally not in the morning, but later, and they take turns grooming. And you wonder, what are they looking for? Well, and they take their time, and they go through the hair, and they're looking for anything that shouldn't be there. And by the way, if you ever around monkeys and you have a scratch, you have a scab, they'll pull it right off. Because to them, that's a parasite. And that's how they stay parasite-free in nature. For example, there's certain parasites that are on animals, and the animals actually allow birds to go on them to eat the parasites. In effect, they're getting deloused. But it's also something else. I've watched frequently as when primates are grooming, they'll stop and they'll suddenly hug each other. I've seen that so many times. I also saw a primate laying on a pillow and just relaxing and looking. And his partner came over and laid beside him and was grooming him and then just hugged him from behind. And that kind of love we expect from humans and that attachment, that's very common in the primate family, but it's also common in many other families. And that's that grooming process. But it also does something else, and I explain this. It creates a flow of oxytocin, a steady flow, not a scorching upward flow, but just a nice flow. It promotes social trust. And that allows for survival, because if you don't trust the people around you, you're going to be separate from them. If you're separate from them, then you're going to end up not being able to survive. But when there's a pride of lions or a pack of dogs or a family of primates, they protect one another. Sex triggers an enormous flow of oxytocin. It makes you feel great, but then it dissipates. It's gone. It's metabolized rather quickly. But the other side of that is you feel endangered, like a sheep without a flock. Our brain keeps seeking oxytocin because that promotes survival in the state of nature. And natural selection produced a brain that feels good with oxytocin and one that feels bad without it. If you ever walk through a park and you saw some older people sitting, holding hands on a park bench, that's stimulating oxytocin. Now, they're not going to have the high spikes that come when they're having sex, but enough to protect them from extremes of insecurity. Unfortunately, holding just any hand doesn't work. The mammal brain is very picky about what it releases in the amount of oxytocin because misplaced trust threatens survival in the state of nature. I mean, get around an ape, and why I tell people, I take in rescues, I say, I've gained their trust because I've been their mother and their father every day, especially if they were abandoned or they were harmed. If you go stick your finger over there, they'll bite it off. And that's because they don't trust you. In time, they may, but you have to understand, without that oxytocin. So that's why from the time, let's say I find a rescue, and I'll give you an example of this. A gentleman had a stroke, and he had a baby capuchin, and he couldn't take care of her. And he called a person who was in a rescue place, and he said, we can't handle this. It takes too much time and energy. You got to change the diaper 10 times a day. You got to bottle feed him. I got to bathe them every day. We don't have the staff. Could you do it? So that's all right. So when it arrived, it was 3 days. It wouldn't come out of its little travel enclosure. Now, I'd put food there and water, and in the morning I could see some of it was eaten. But then on the third day, I'm sitting there working at my desk, and I see this tiny little finger come out and touch my finger and then pull back. So I left my hand there, and it touched it and kept touching it. And then finally, I just raised my little finger, and I touched this little tiny finger. Just imagine a baby's hand. That's what it looks like. And then about an hour later, it touched my hand, and then I hear a little tiny whoo, just like a little whoo. That's what they sound like. And then about a minute later, I see these two adorable big round eyes peering up at me. It was seeking trust. In that little exchange, it had received enough oxytocin to feel that it could trust me. So then when I continued to touch it, then the little baby climbs up on my chest and sucks her thumb with one hand and holds on to my T-shirt on the other. So I sew on a pocket right above my heart, and so she's in there. So all day long she's getting little hugs and kisses all day long. And then I feed her a bottle about 10 times a day of a special formula that I make for primates and give her a little bath. And that night I give her a security blanket and a teddy bear. And then she climbs up, and when I'm just about asleep, and she curls up and right up around my neck, and then I can hear her purring. Now, when a capuchin's purring, that's their ultimate state of trust and relaxation. And very important. And then later, as she grows and begins to explore life and goes out to a tree that's a giant tree, 80 foot high, and about 9 months later, she's climbing all over that tree, and she's, but then when it starts to get dark, she immediately runs back in the house. She'll open the door and run back in. Very smart. Oh, they're so intelligent. They know how to open doors, close doors. When they want water, they go over to the faucet and open the faucet and drink water. I know how to open a refrigerator. You have no idea how smart the capuchins are. In fact, they're so smart, they're the only ones taught how to feed and give medications to completely paralyzed individuals, and in turn also take care of their own needs. So that's how smart they are. Very loving. And so then every day, you have to continue the bottle feeding throughout their whole life, and the grooming, because that creates the oxytocin, and that creates the trust, and then they know that you're a place of safe. But then again, think of when we are holding hands, and we're just gently touching one another, that also creates the same phenomena. And also they'll get the oxytocin from your scent. And that's why sometimes we love certain scents. Like a mother loves the scent of her baby and will know her baby. If you put a lot of babies in a room and you blindfold the women, she'd be able to smell her baby. And also, you know, a little puppy breath and little puppies. People are really impacted by smells. And that also creates oxytocin. Now, the other side of this is this. Our urge to trust could get us into trouble were it not for nature's alarm signal, cortisol. This chemical is often equated with stress, but it's the primitive brain's pain signal. Betrayal, trust, leads to physical pain in the state of nature. So your cortisol siren is triggered when your trust is betrayed. Now here's where it gets a little tricky, so you got to listen very focused. We are left with a terrible dilemma. Our brain craves the good feelings of trust, yet it avoids things associated with past pain as if your life depended on it. Humans have struggled with this brain since they first walked the earth. In past millennia, people relied on fixed social bonds to stimulate their oxytocin, ease their cortisol. They formed tribes and clans and families, and pair bonds were with sharp distinctions about when to trust and when not to trust. And maybe you were hurt at some point in your life by someone in the circle that you had trusted. But survival without them seemed difficult. You rarely got to pick and choose your trust bonds or build your own from scratch. Well, more often than not, we are thrust into these networks early in life. They become our family, our extended family, our classmates, and later relationships. How many times have we sought someone to rescue us from the pain that we felt, the emptiness we felt, the lack of trust we felt because we weren't given the kind of trust we were betrayed? And more often than not, the betrayal was an early life betrayal by a family member that didn't think that we were enough, to be enough, to be loved and appreciated for who we are. So we have no way to really intellectualize this. We can only emotionalize it. Epigenetically, we impact our DNA. So one day we wake up and we seem hard. We don't allow the heart energy to vibrate, though we want to. We may hear people talking about love and heart and sharing the heart and love and romance, but they can't. They share their mind. They talk it. They talk it, they can't walk it. And you think, why? Well, they do things that completely sabotage their relationship. Gossip, betrayal, of trust. You see, when you trust someone to hold your life with respect and joy, if they take advantage, if they abuse it, or if they neglect it, then there's no more oxytocin to share. So the person that has been abused withdraws that energy. So you may have experiences, but you won't share the energy. I did a lot of experiments, hundreds of experiments, at the Institute of Applied Biology. Yes, the ones I did on nutrition, many of them are well known. Many of them set the basis for what people are doing today without even realizing it. Therapeutic touch that's used in all the hospitals of teaching schools in the United States. Dr. Dolores Krieger, Chairman of the Department of Nursing at New York University. That all was formally done at the research I did on exchanging healing energies with healers into rats. 6 out of 6 times, these individuals, about 6 out of 50, were able to heal their rats. 6 out of 6 times. And you'll see photographs of Dr. Krieger, Rabbi Abraham Wiseman, Dr. Thomas Kruth, and others up on my website way back when. But now, you talk about therapeutic touch, and everyone in medicine, nursing, knows therapeutic touch. Yeah, that was my study. You talk about combining proteins to get, you know, rice and beans and whatever. That was the egg project I did, the Supply Biology, showing that all food contains all 8 essential amino acids in different combinations. Therefore, by different combinations, one that's weak in lysine, one that's strong in lysine, now you have a complete protein. But what people may not realize is that I did much more research into energy, because I always wondered, why do people say something but they don't seem to be able to exchange what they're saying? Because now I realize it's fear, insecurity, uncertainty. So what you didn't get as a child, you're going to struggle with later as an adult, and generally in contradictory terms. What do I mean by that? Let's say that all children need love. All children need to feel appreciated. They need guidance. They need discipline, not corporal discipline, but discipline. They need inspiration and motivation. They'll give you the energy. But what if they don't get it? And therefore, they grow up deprived. That'll manifest more often than not by excessively and compulsively seeking it in all the wrong places, in all the wrong ways, and self-sabotaging. Never being able to look in the mirror and say, why am I doing all this, and taking responsibility. Their egos are too shallow for that. They can't see themselves as being the one that's at fault. They'll blame others. But once they do share something, where they get this unconditional love, like having a puppy, having a kitten, having a bird, where you're getting unconditional love, then you're getting oxytocin. Being able to be around people you trust. I mentioned it on the last program. When someone says, I've got your back. For someone to say to you, I've got your back, they're saying, I care about you. You can trust me. I'm there, no matter what happens, to defend you. That's a very important bond. In fact, I once was with my father, and I guess I was about 5 years old, and we were at a parade, and it was on 4th of July, and as the troops marched down the street, my father just became real, went into an attention stand. He put his hand across his heart, and I'm looking up at him, and I'm thinking, why? What's this? And then later, I remember saying, why did you do that? And he said, because those people in the military, and he served in the U.S. Navy in the USS Cross in the South Pacific as a gunner's mate, he said, you'll have people die for you. Your buddy is there. They'll fall on a grenade for you. They put their own lives at risk for you. And he said, you never forget that. That's a bond that stays with you forever. He says, so when I go to attention, when the parade comes down the street, I'm simply acknowledging to them the respect I have. So today that would be, these people had our backs, and that's a bond. By the way, a lot of athletes, at least historically, not so much today, you can see that same bond. But you can have, when someone has your back in many ways, it creates that oxytocin. Oxytocin comes from being accepted and respected. So it costs you nothing to be nice. It costs a tremendous amount not to be. And a lot of people pride themselves in judgmental attitude, harshness, being insensitive to other people, and just assuming that whatever they say and do to someone else, well, they should be forgiven for it. Well, they may be forgiven, but you just lost your oxytocin connection. But then the person remembers what that oxytocin was, because the cells remember, and then you crave it, then you get angry because you no longer have it. Why do you think that we say our heart is broken, I'm in pain, emotional pain? What they're saying is that the oxytocin connection is no longer there, but every cell in their body remembers when it was, and they'll spend the rest of their life with that memory intact. So that's why we should think about the consequences of what we do and say, how we act around people. So when we have not had the type of development as a child, it later comes back to haunt us. And almost always, we will want to have someone to share that with. But the person then is sharing experiences. But if they don't trust, then they're not going to be vulnerable enough to share unconditionally. It's going to be a measured sharing. And that's what we see today. We leave behind the imperfect social bonds of our youth and the expectation of something better. But it turns out that trust bonds are harder to build than we expect, especially after the neuroplasticity of youth. We shop for oxytocin and get disappointed sometimes. Different relationships, different jobs. Sometimes we have remarkable connections, especially if we're fortunate enough to be around the right people, make right friends, and have right experiences, live in the right place, have the right job. Then every day, if you're going into a job that you love, you're recreating oxytocin. Just being able to know that you got a loving animal when you get home at night, that creates the oxytocin. When your brain looks for oxytocin, it relies on neural pathways built from your unique life experience. Your past oxytocin flows pave neural pathways that help your brain trigger more in the future. So if you enjoyed social trust while playing chess with old men in the park, or getting, let's say if you're a woman, getting your hair done in a salon, neurons connected that trigger the expectation of social trust from similar experiences, you're going to enjoy that. Now, there are people who enjoyed oxytocin, loud bars, or in quiet living rooms. You wired yourself to find more of the same. An early experience built the superhighway to the oxytocin because neurons connect easily in childhood and in puberty. The trust you experienced with your family and schoolmates wired you to expect trust in that way today. The trouble is, we don't always get it. Cortisol paves neural pathways that warn us to avoid things that can hurt you. When you're disappointed by someone you trust, your brain builds warning signals of potential pain. Cortisol makes you feel like you're in immediate danger. You don't realize that social pain is part of every mammal's life. Animals often bite a troop mate who gets in their way, and by the time a young mammal is grown, it has experienced enough bites to build a pain-avoiding neural network that keeps it safely out of the way of bigger troop mates. The mammal brain is constantly deciding when it's safe to trust and when it's not safe to trust. We're doing better than we realize. We have built a world in which strangers work towards common goals without biting each other. Once we achieve the goal, we move on in the expectation of building new trust with new people. We don't realize what a big accomplishment this is because of the social bonds of the past have been idealized. One of the things that I notice is that more often than not, one of the mistakes we make in life, all of us, is that we become enamored by the fantasy of what could be. Just imagine how we play that. And then one day, after our conquest or our acquiescence or our union, whether it's a job, a place to live, a relationship, a friendship, one day we realize that our fantasy is not being matched by the reality of what we are, where we're at, who we're with. And then we only have so many options depending upon our conditioning. We either try to convert the other person to match our needs. That's not good. We have no right to do that. Or we change ourselves, readapt, maladapt to the other person's needs. Really bad idea. Because later on, anyone who maladapts to your needs, when it doesn't work anymore, they'll give you a gigantic check for everything that they adapted to that they didn't like. I never liked going to that kind of movie, but I went to appease you. I never liked this. Why didn't you tell me at the time? Because they were trying to adapt to create some connection, because the fantasy was so good initially. Now, more often than not, some of the strongest fantasies we have are about sex. Wouldn't it be great if this sex was so good today, if I could have this all the time? Yes, it would be. And some people are fortunate enough to have that. But those are generally very progressive individuals who are functioning at the higher end of their life without jealousy, without envy, without anger all boiling over, and with a sense of humor about life. When two people are sharing the best they are with each other, you're not only building these new neural pathways and secreting really good amounts of oxytocin, so you're chronically feeling good and excited, but you're also able then to extend that into other areas of the relationship. If anyone's ever going to have a good relationship, they have to have good friendship as a part of that. It's when we are attracted to someone or someplace, and then we think, what would this be? But it's not. And then one day, we're maladapting, they're maladapting, we're both maladapting, and then people start looking for ways to demean the other person or disempower the other person. And that happens every second of the day. And all it takes is someone to say something about you, your masculinity or femininity, your weight or your age, to make you feel bad. If people want to make you feel bad, it's by intent. It's not accidental. And then you look for patterns of behavior. And when you see a pattern of behavior, then what you're dealing with is an unfortunate soul. And here's my suggestion. And here's what I've done in my own life. I don't hold a grudge. I don't believe in violence against people. And I don't believe in vengeance. All I do is process it as information. It's just information. Someone is expressing themselves in inappropriate ways because of what they couldn't have, couldn't control, and couldn't own. Me. And I'm not for sale, nor rent, nor lease. And life is just a series of passages. And I believe that the person that is living mindfully knows when the passage is up, appreciates who's been in there, where they've been. Even some of the worst of circumstances can cause us to grow because it forces us to examine by living in reverse the mistakes we've made. Instead of focusing upon the pain that we feel, loss of oxytocin, and betrayal, loss of trust, focus upon what you learned, information that allowed you to make better choices in the future, especially where it was so transparent. And then almost always people say, yeah, I saw it, I just didn't want to accept it. Yeah, I saw that in the behavior, I saw that in behavior. But, you know, and then one day they wake up and they're not doing anything about what they see. They've adapted, maladapted. And unfortunately, they make almost all the wrong choices from that moment forward. So let's start making some right choices. Try to intuitively see whether or not the person that you're with, the environment you're in, the job you're looking at, the food you're eating, is it harmonizing with your higher self? If it is, that's a good exchange of energy. And that way, trust is regained and synchronicity is reestablished. Harmony is flowing and oxytocin is flooding the system. Trust builds from an accumulation of small experiences. If you write someone as something to someone that is negative and toxic, and you're writing to hurt them, to demean them, to disempower them, then it's telling me, if you do that, that you're a person coming from your own insecurity. What you fear in your own self, lack of trust in yourself, honesty in yourself, unconditional love in yourself, you're afraid of that in another person. What we hate, we almost always attack. And what we hate about ourselves, we will attack what we perceive to be another person. True or not is irrelevant to the issue. How many times, only after the fact, have we learned that we have said something, done something, experienced something, or thought something that was out of context to reality? We live very small lives. We're shrinking intellectually. We're shrinking creatively. We're shrinking on all levels. We become passive spectators. Passivity, watching television, going to movies, listening to music, idle and mindless conversations, this doesn't give us what we need to sustain ourselves. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. More on the next program. I'm going to save my discussion on pycnogenol for the next program, but I've got a lot to share on it. The whole purpose of this program is to empower people. You can always listen over the telephone if for some reason you're traveling or you're not near a computer or a land-based station. Let me give you the numbers. 401-347-0456. 401-347-0456 or 712-432-7231. 712-432-7231. And also keep in mind that you can go to the archives, download any show, and we always have documentaries and articles for you. Go to blog.garynall.com. Have a nice day, everyone.